and welcome to Bend the Knee, Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight, Fist of the Dragon, Lord of the White Castle, Maker of Gains, and now, because Ezra has been so unwatchful, I had to go to the doctor, get glasses, so that I can make sure that I've got an eye on it, okay?
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I was about to say, my list of titles, my friend, Sir Ezra the Watchful here, Sir Ezra the Unresponsive.
Unwatchful.
The unwatchful and the unresponsive, and I'm open to more suggestions, you know, send those my way. But friends, we are back. Matt, we're tuning in here, and we're going to kind of go region by region, Winds of Winter. Something we've danced around, we've had some pretty good discussions and talks, but this is sort of a compilation. So like, we're not going to get super deep on any one area, but yeah, I think this will be good.
Yeah, let's go ahead and let's just, man, get going, get diving in here. So this is actually a Reddit thread from about 7 years ago, but it does a great job just sort of serving as an outline for everything that Ez and I are about to go over. So we're going to use this sort of as an outline and then just go from there. So this is, characters and plot predictions for the Winds of Winter. And again, so both A Feast for Crows and A Dance of Dragons left off with a number of cliffhangers in terms of both characters and plot. And we have something of a wait ahead of us prior to the Winds of Winter. Little did they know back right. then, right. 7 years ago. Fortunately, the user, I guess, is no longer part of Reddit. He deleted his account, so I can't give credit. But nonetheless, in order to mitigate the weight and have a little fun, I thought it might be a fun idea to do some broad and or specific speculation on characters and plot points from The Winds of Winter. This is something I've done previously, and I've always really enjoyed everyone's responses. So here we go. So the far north. We have Bran Stark. He's in the cave of the Three-Eyed Crow, learning the ways of a Green Seer or a Skin Changer, right? Last known plot points from A Feast for Crows, Dance of Dragons, and the sample Winds of Wind chapters. Having crossed the Northern Waste, Bran Stark, Jojen, and Mira, Hodor, and Summer have entered the cave of the Three-Eyed Crow. Under the guidance from Blood Raven, Bran eats weirwood paste and starts seeing visions of the past. Jojen hasn't been seen since A Dance with Dragons, Bran 2, while Mira has grown distant from Bran. Meanwhile, the Night's Watch expedition to Hardhome has met disaster. Several ships are sunk, and Cotter Pike reports dead things in the woods and the water.
Yeah. Yeah, the far north, man. So this is where, I mean, all, it feels like all the magic and all those different things are kind of going on. I mean, it's like, this is why we've speculated for years about Bloodraven and about what's happening in the cave and whether or not Jojen is alive, whether Bran is actually, you know, is he working on some, you know, the Hodor moment could be coming. We know that. Right from the TV show, we also have then Mira Reed, who is growing more distant, but like we have no idea, even based on the show, like what happens to her. She just literally disappears and goes away. The whole Hallen Reed thing never gets mentioned. We never see Hallen Reed, we never talk about the Reed children in the show, and so it really goes to the whole point that we have no idea what is going to happen with those characters, and the show just drops that. So when people say, hey, this is all going to be really different, I get it, Matt. I understand 100% as to how they say that and why, you know, because those are two real, Matt, they're the ones who come in and say, we swear by ice and fire. So
right.
Shocking. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because the connections to Hallen Reed, who we have yet to meet, but we know was there at the Tower of Joy. So regardless of what went down there, whether R plus L does equal J, or maybe he just flat out killed Arthur Dayne in single combat or something, Hallen Reed was there for very significant events. He was there at the tourney at Harrenhal as well. And Mira and Jojen show up on the orders of their father.
Yeah.
And then they're the ones who take Bran north to, on this magical quest. And so very, very, very important, very, very, very strange. And they, well, unless Jojen's dead, obviously, but Mira certainly could reveal a lot of secrets and will play a very important role in the Winds of Winter.
Yeah, and I'll just recap. Some things that Matt and I have talked about over the years are, and the one thing people got kind of tired of, right, was the Blood Raven theories. Whether is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Ravens versus crows. What does it all mean? How do Bran's dreams tie in together? And the big one is just, you know, the Bran theories, the idea that he's going to be a king possibly, but is he going to be changed? People are wondering too how the far north will connect with the wall, the events that are taking place with like Jon and Resurrection. So yeah, I just feel like that those are sort of the big things that we talk about when we think about the far north, and you know, also the others, right? I don't know if that was mentioned in this Reddit post or not, but again, the others, will they have a leader? Cold Hands is referenced in this as well too, right? Who is Cold Hands? How does he work? Are there more individuals like this? So yeah, it's an area where it's like deep magic, and it's really cool. This Song of Ice and Fire that's going on, like in the middle of it's the Game of Thrones, all these different things. But like to the far north, you have all these powers, and then to the far south and east, away with Dany, you have other stuff going on too. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the wall. So at the wall, we have Melisandre and Jon Snow, both of which are at Castle Black. Melisandre's last sort of what she's doing that we see is making vague predictions to Jon, telling him to look to the skies. And Jon Snow's last actions were getting stabbed. So, wow. Jon Snow has been stabbed by key members of the Night's Watch and is currently bleeding out. Several thousand wildlings are living in and around Castle Black. Queen Selyse, Princess Shireen, Baratheon are staying in, and they are around the King's Tower. The Weeper is on the move. Melisandre asks R'hllor for a glance for Azor Ahai, only to see Snow. And that's capitalized in the Melisandre chapter from A Dance with Dragons.
Yeah, and Matt and I just did a video breaking down sort of Val and her presence there as well, right? So these are just quick summaries about some of the major characters there, but Val is there as well, and we had a full breakdown on that. You know, the thing is, one of the bigger things with this is, and it's again based upon the show, but it is what it is. They had notes from George's work and where he was going to go, an outline, if you will. Shireen is killed in the show, so it's easy to kind of predict that. Yeah, she's someone who Val doesn't like. We almost wondered whether Val would make an alliance with Melisandre or be okay with killing, you know, Queen Selyse's daughter. Like, how's that going to affect Stannis? How's that going to affect, like, you know, the thing that could break Stannis is this very thing, right, Matt? Like, he could win. Yes. We've wondered, how does he win? It looks like he's going to win all these different things. How does he get to the point where he's just a broken man who makes a big mistake? Does news of the loss of his daughter cause him to make big mistakes or to rush headlong into something that he's not prepared for? So the other big prediction out there is that Patchface will also go with Shireen, and that he might be burned because he's a devilish type of guy, maybe a more true prophet than Melisandre. I don't know, she's scared of him in some way in the flames, right? Sees something, skulls and bones and blood all around him. So
yeah, obviously this is probably the region that everyone is most interested in heading into A Dance of Dragons, just because, you know, we all think we see in the show Jon gets resurrected. Seems likely he's going to get resurrected in the books. When is going to be the interesting thing, and that's going to be the real setter of the table in / when Winds of Winter ever does actually come out, because it drastically changes, I guess, how that book's going to be told. If Jon is resurrected at the end of the book, then maybe the North isn't that big of a focus. I don't really know what all you could do up there. I mean, they're going to want to, I mean, and you're just going to have to have Jon Snow's body hidden or taken away or something.
Right.
Remember that Alistair Thorne, we talked about this, is gone. He's not there. Like he is in the show. He's one of the key members in the show that leads this attack. He comes when Jon Snow gets up, he kills him. In the book, he's gone. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that he's not going to be okay with this attack, but I've always thought it would be interesting if he wasn't and he came back, and rather, regardless of whether he learns that Jon was a Targaryen because he was a Targaryen loyalist during the battle, or he just thinks that it was wrong to kill him. It could be just something as simple as that, which could be a cool, interesting take on the story to think, no, he's still our Lord Commander, regardless of whether I like him or not.
Right.
It's just, you cannot kill another member of the Night's Watch unless they've like really done something. So, and he wasn't there for it. So it could be kind of cool to see what happens when he does come back and just how his arc is going to be portrayed. The rest of the wall and that storyline, you know, you think about Val, the Wildlings, is all going to be very dependent on Stannis. And I'm sure we'll get to him here in a bit, like what's going on over at Winterfell. But I think likely we're going to be going down a path that's pretty similar with the wall. Jon's going to get resurrected, and then we're going to be dealing with the Boltons, and then eventually we'll be dealing with the others.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And so it's interesting. You were talking about some of the other. In this Reddit post, they mentioned the Weeper, and I kind of forgot about the Weeper. But yeah, you're right that it's all about the Wildlings, how they're received, and then Alistair Thorne, as you said, he comes back and like killing a member of the Night's Watch, he's not okay with. So the Weeper is a character.
Yeah,
he might not be right. The Weeper is a character who does kill three of the Night's Watch members, and like Jon is pushing for like, hey, as long as he joins us, like, we'll let him through. Now, hold on a second. I mean, again, they were all just at war, right? They were all just kind of killing each other and stuff. But it seems like the dust has settled from that, and they were still holdouts. There's still holdouts that are beyond the wall that he's trying to get either at Hardhome or whatever. So I think that is kind of interesting. There's a lot of it's not clean up there. It's not clear cut. We don't really know exactly how everyone is going to feel. The tension is just boiling up there, because you've got Queen Selyse, the Queen's men, they're set up shop there. They're kind of doing their own thing. You got the Night's Watch, you've got the Wildlings. Melisandre is seeing things, and she's willing like to move one way or another based upon how the flames, or what she thinks is the right thing to do in the flames. So she's seeing Snow, and she's talking to Jon Snow, and maybe she's starting to kind of change her mind a little bit. So she's a big wild card up there. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I think the whole Shireen Baratheon thing is going to happen. Patch Face, I believe that's going to happen. And the big mystery is still Val and what the Wildlings will do. Will they stick with Jon? I think even Jon's resurrection is things that people theorize a lot about, like how the exact, like, is it Melisandre? Will there be some brand intervention? Ghost, like you said, we probably won't get a lot of, this was in our Bannerman chat. People were talking about the idea that Ghost will be that vessel for Jon's point of view chapters for maybe a while or something,
right?
Which would be fascinating.
Yeah, I do think it'd be cool. I think that is probably likely. That was one of the things that we thought might happen in the show, but they just didn't even need to discuss that route. Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly where it is. Is it the epilogue of A Storm of Swords? The chapter where Nymeria, you get the chapter from Nymeria's point of view, where she pulls like a body out. Well, I don't know if they actually specifically say it's Nymeria, but it's like a wolf's point of view, but it's pretty obviously Nymeria.
Like Lady Stoneheart.
She pulls Lady Stoneheart out. We could get something like that where it's from Ghost's point of view, but Ghost feels weird. There's something weird about Ghost, and it's taken over. So that would be interesting and fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be really cool. And I think it's likely. I think that people...
That could even honestly be the prologue of a Winds for Winter. I know George has written several chapters, but if you go back to the post he made, I believe it was sometime in 2020. It was like in the middle of 2020, where the first time he'd really talked about Winds of Winter for a long time. Remember that post where he laid out and he was like, I have rewritten chapters. I have put a lot of stuff in. So I know we have these sample chapters, but I still think, given the language he used in that, it is fair to say that anything that we've read from these Wind sample chapters, I would not consider it. I think it's subject to change.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, too, to think that what he's the author. So if he wants to change something, he can change it. Like the show went on with an outline. And I love that. I love that. It's such a unique thing. He just wants to tell the best story and send us on the best adventure that he can. So I think it's cool. I think you're right. I think we could see that as a prologue, and it'd be fascinating to learn more about what John is seeing through Ghost's eyes and what Ghost is doing. So yeah, like it.
Okay. Moving on to our next region here, we just simply have the North, right? So we have Theon, Asha, and Davos. So Theon is at Stannis's camp at the Crofters. It's a village 3 days ride west of Winterfell. He's chained to a wall, listening to Stannis and Ravens. You have Asha, same place, counseling Stannis to execute Theon. And then you have Davos. Last time we saw him was at White Harbor, and he's going to be sailing to Skagos to recover Rickon Stark in exchange for Manderly loyalty against the Freys and the Boltons. So last known plot points. Stannis and the Boltons are on a collision course set with a fateful battle soon to be had. By Theon's sample chapter from The Winds of Winter, Stannis is preparing the battle, planning to utilize the terrain in and around Crofter's village. Stannis is sending false Arya, who's Jane Poole, back to Castle Black with Sir Justin Massey. He's also given instructions to Massey to head to Braavos to hire sellswords, you know, the Golden Company, if he can. Roose Bolton has contentious lords under his roof and has dispatched Frey and Manderly men into the Wolfswood to destroy Stannis Baratheon's host or die trying. Lord Wyman Manderly was attacked by Hosteen and was last seen bleeding inside Winterfell. Davos Seaworth sails for Skagos, having learned from Wyman Manderly and Robert Glover that Rickon is on Skagos.
Yeah.
So we'll start with Theon here. You know, Theon's end is end of A Dance with Dragons is really interesting. That's where we have the attacks inside Winterfell. Who is the Hooded Man theory? Some people think he's not even a real person.
Right.
Some people think it's Theon, right? In his own imagination, because given some of the language that he has, I guess for me, Theon and Winds of Winter, I don't think he's going to die. You know, Asha's here trying to encouraging Stannis to execute him. I do ultimately believe there's still more to go with Theon's storyline, and that I do think he will probably have a little bit of redemption. He will probably meet Jon again or Bran again. I don't know if it's going to go down the same line that the show does, where he's defending Bran in Winterfell, against a Night King or even just others in the books. It would be super cool. It would be super cool. And I've often said in talking about trying to use the show, one of the things that's so interesting in the books compared to the show, even for the chapters we do have, is the point of view chapters that George uses to tell a story. Like we just covered A Clash of Kings again, to go back to the Battle of the Blackwater. I really love those Battle of the Blackwater chapters, because you go from Davos, who's on one side, to Tyrion, who's on the other side, to Sansa, who's up in the castle, like hearing the battle go on. And you're going around, and I've always thought, in the event we get anything similar to the show, Theon would be like such a cool chapter to be one of those chapters that if the Battle of Winterfell happens exactly the same way as it does in the show, not saying it's going to, but I thought Theon's chapter would be such a cool chapter, because it'd be like he gets stabbed by the Night King, he is falling down, and he's like turning over, and then as the chapter's ending, you can see, like, you just see him like marching towards Bran, and like that's how the page ends. It would just be a really, really cool chapter to describe in that way. Then it would have to shift to Bran or even Arya, or you know, not that it's going to go that way, but something similar, even if it's with a White Walker or fighting Euron or any of those things. I thought it would be a really cool way to do that.
Yeah, it builds that suspense. And like you said, even as just as you were saying there, if he does start to die, and then we see him marching towards Bran, we want resolution for that. And what George will do is take us outside, you know, the Godswood, and take us back out to the battle with someone else. And that was, you know, so we don't even get to see, really. It takes a couple more chapters to get back to that conclusion. That's just what he does. And It's fantastic. Now, the other characters like Mance Rayder, I think that's still a big one, a character who's been mentioned since the very beginning of the series. What was George's plan for that character? It's just kind of wild to think that the show had, that can't be his end here. He's mentioned in the pink letter. He's sent here. Is he captured? Is he not? Is he that hooded figure that you talked about? Some people theorize that he is. He's probably not. But he's still there and he's communicating with folks in and out of Winterfell. And I think he knows a way out. He knew a way in. So I think we'll see more of Mance Rayder. But Stannis marching Manderly too. The whole thing going down with Manderly. Manderly has already spoken with Davos and Davos is bringing Rick on. And I think when Manderly's men get there with Stannis, they're just going to stop, sit down, shake hands. The Freys are running headlong. This is why you and I have said, like, it really looks like Stannis is going to win that battle. And the tricky part is that Manderly is still inside. And it's all about maybe helping people find a way. If they have Theon, I think he would then know a way to sneak back in to Winterfell. So if he sticks with Stannis, he can show them how to get in there. Because I'm a little worried about Manderly in there. I think he's dead, especially if you find out that his men are fighting for Stannis and he's still inside. That becomes kind of tricky. So we'll see how that's navigated, because he's already set up a sort of a tentative peace or truce or an alliance with Davos, sending him to Skagos to get Rick on. Manderly's already done that, so that'll be cool to see how that all unfolds. But I think, even if Manderly does die, I feel like a lot of this is just revenge, you know, knowing that he gets his son back or whatever. He is he's upset with Bolton for betraying the North, and he's upset with the Lannisters and everything. He was all behind King Robb, a true Northman, even though he's from that whole house is very interesting. I've always loved the idea that house is relocated and the Starks take them in and they found another harbor where they've been investing. I think it was, shout out to this podcast, Order of the Green Hand, who did ask Martin, will that become a thing? Is there a plan to talk more about all of that and the Manderlys and stuff? So yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Manderlys, and essentially this will tie into Rickon. I've been thinking more about the idea that I don't think it's going to be Sansa and the Vale coming up to save. If Stannis loses and we go down a similar path and Jon is resurrected and has to go lead a battle against him in a battle of the bastards, Sansa's arc, which we'll get to here shortly, is just so different, because she's not fleeing Roose Bolton Ramsay Snow. She's not fleeing her marriage with him. So that's so drastically different. So what if it is perhaps instead a battle, even if it's taking place at Castle Black, if Stannis is defeated and Ramsay's now going to go, even if he did write the pink letter, which I don't think he did, but even if he did, it does seem like we might get some showdown between Ramsay and Jon. And what if it's actually, instead of Sansa coming in with the veil, what if it is Rickon and Davos and some Skagosi on their unicorns, which I think are really some sort of, you know, more beasts, right? Just with a single horn, like more rhinos really than what are we traditionally think of unicorns. So I think that could be an interesting way to still do it. And then Rickon would be playing more of a part. The problem is that Rickon in the books is like 4 years old. So I don't think Rickon's going to be on the battlefield at 4 years old, but the Skagosi could view him as a very important piece themselves, because they're kind of out there on their own, kind of wildlings, kind of not.
Right.
And they could view him as a very, very important piece.
Yeah, I 100% think that is possible. I mean, they have to. I feel like Davos is going to be in some way reintegrated with either Stannis or Jon or Melisandre. We saw tidbits of that, you know, hinted at in the show. And so, yeah, it's just bringing Rick on in. I feel like he'll be at the back of some host, right? Instead of leading it because of his age, he'll just be at the back of it with Davos there. And they have propped him up. And Shaggy Dog, like the wildness of Rickon, it all kind of makes sense that he would fit in with this super wild group and come back and and help in some way. And Davos Manderly knows that's going on. He knows that it's a possibility that they can bring him in. And that's why he's agreed to back Stannis. Because Stannis has already shown that he's willing to put somebody in as the Lord of Winterfell and do this. So Davos is making an arrangement. He has the king's approval, King Stannis' approval, to make an arrangement, making an alliance like this. So that would be really cool to see that all unfold. And the crazy thing is that like all of that will go in Stannis' favor. And I think something will be his undoing, and it could be his daughter or his wife. I mean, losing your whole family, if your wife kills herself and your daughter was killed by Melisandre, it might not just be Davos that says, shame on you, Melisandre. That might be the thing.
Davos could end up killing Stannis, as crazy as that sounds. If Stannis burns Shireen, Davos could sort of lose it, and they could end up killing. He could end up in a totally weird, different take on
it. Yeah, exactly. So either that, like, yeah, if Stannis is like a-okay with that happening, yeah, Davos could get really upset, and that for sure. If Stannis is doing his thing and Melisandre's still at the wall, and Davos and Stannis find out that like his wife and daughter is dead and Patchface is dead and Melisandre's behind it, I think she's gonna be on the outs.
Do you see any scenario in which Brienne of Tarth kills Stannis?
No. I don't know. I mean, she swore to, right? That was the whole thing. Like that is, that's why in the show, you look at some of that stuff.
The only way it could go down similarly is if Brienne, I mean, we'll get to her, but Brienne would have to get away from Lady Stoneheart and go north and hear about this Arya Stark that's on the run, find Jane Poole, and then also perhaps find Stannis, same way it's done. In the show, Stannis is in the woods by himself after this battle, and then kill him as revenge for Renly.
Yeah, it did. Like you said, it would take Lady Stoneheart going all the way up there, because in the show they put her right beside him.
I felt like they didn't know what to do with Brienne.
Yeah,
season seven. She has a cool fight with Arya, just for like the sake of it. But other than her final moment with Jaime, and then her final
stuff between her and Tormund,
which is freaking like that was like genius. By far that was the most funny part of the show. That was actually something the show did well. Whether it's there or not in the books is doesn't matter, because it was funny and actually worked. But then I do like the idea of her getting knighted and then getting to have to write Jaime's name in the book, and it's hard and heartbreaking. Yeah. Like that, I think was she of all the characters had a sort of decent ending. I mean, not like good for her, but I think it was like in terms of writing, I think it was actually it was good.
It's just this, what do you do?
It was a good dramatic. It was a good drama,
right? So if it ends the same way in the books, it's awesome. But then like those big moments versus Stannis or Jane, like how that all unfolds in the books is going to be obviously different. But if it ends the same way with her doing that like similar stuff and being there in the King's Garden writing in the White Book, I'm all for that. That is actually a great way to kind of have her arc tied up. So,
okay. Let's move on to the Vale. So Sansa, right? She's at the Gates of the Moon, learning the ways of Littlefinger, pretending to be Elaine Stone. So some big plot points from the Vale. Littlefinger has successfully quieted the Lord's declarant and has bought himself a year in time in the Vale. Littlefinger is also likely poisoning Robert Arryn, albeit slowly, so that he will seem innocent of the crime. Sansa is learning the ways of Littlefinger and is able to more quickly pick up on Littlefinger's plots. Littlefinger plans to have Sansa marry Harry the heir, Harding, claiming fealty from the Vale and take the North. However, Sir Shadrick the Mad Mouse has just arrived at the Gates of Moon and has sworn service to Littlefinger. Sir Shadrick, if you recall, was the knight that Brienne encountered on the way to Duskendale. He's searching for Sansa to recoup money lost in his ransom. Sansa has inadvertently revealed information to Miranda Royce that might reveal her identity. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say Sansa is the one, is like really, she's not the one, but she is one of the characters that in the books, I have no idea what's going to happen to her, because she's a total chess piece for me that George is going to have to figure out, because even whether you try to sort of fit stuff into the show as like a rough outline, mm-hmm. she's like not where she is, totally different person, totally different piece. So to me, like almost all of her arc that happens in the show is not happening to her going forward. Maybe she will end up as Queen of the North. I'd be fine and could see that. But the way we're going to get there is totally different. And then just sort of projecting how I think the books in my headcanon, and I think a lot of people's sort of mindset of how the books will finish very differently. I'm still struggling to see how I think she's going to get to go forward. I mean, she could marry young Griff. She mm-hmm. could stay in the Vale for a bit and be involved in something that's going on with King's Landing, mm-hmm. like sending knights there. We could run into Lady Stoneheart. There's a lot of different paths and avenue for Sansa. The sort of key theory surrounding Sansa that I think has some validity is the five champions.
Yeah.
Right. And that ultimately she could end up marrying or being promised to marry a Targaryen, whether that's young Griff as a false Targaryen, a real Targaryen, or even Jon or something. It does look pretty likely that that is what's going on with her. And that could be a power play. I mean, her real conflict currently and probably and going forward into Winds of Winter and perhaps Dream of Spring is with Littlefinger.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you brought up that theory about the different champions, and like the one right prior to being like engaged to or married to a Targaryen is the Harry the Heir.
So the five champions were Lionel let me see here. The Ashford theory, right? Mm-hmm. So Lionel Baratheon, Leo Tyrell, Tybalt Lannister, Humphrey Harding, and Velar Targaryen.
Yeah.
Those were the five champions. So she was promised to Lionel Baratheon, who technically, if you really want to get technical about it, people think, well, it's really Joffrey Lannister. Well, it's not even actually Joffrey Lannister. It's Joffrey Hill because mm-hmm. he's a bastard. Leo Tyrell, she was married to Willis. Or she was potentially talked to being married to Willis Tyrell. Tybalt Lannister, she was actually married to Tyrion, mm-hmm. who she's technically still married to. Mm-hmm. There was no annulment. There was no divorce.
Not consummated, yeah.
Right. Now she's promised to Humphrey Harding, or planning to. And then the final one is a Targaryen. Now, it could be interesting if the final Targaryen is also sort of a fake Targaryen, which would be young Griff, if that, you know, that scenario. So that means the first and the last would technically be not really a Baratheon.
Sure.
If you want to go that route.
Yeah. Unless she and Jon Snow, Jon Targaryen, are going to, you know, right. you know, which is crazy. Yeah, man, I actually think Sansa is a big wild card. Like the show sends her north, but in the book she might be going back to King's Landing. Like Sir Shadrick the Mad Mouse is also an interesting character because Brienne does know him and she is searching for a maid with auburn hair, and you know, and he's like, yeah, we know. He's like, we get it, we're looking for her too. And so he will come across her if she does undye her hair, and if Miranda Royce does figure out that this is Sansa Stark, well, that's going to be a big deal. So things can unfold pretty quickly here for Littlefinger, but Sir Shadrick is in Littlefinger's employ, maybe he's buying him. If that's the case, if he's working for Littlefinger, is he really going to take her back to, which would the Mad Mouse take her back to King's Landing, or would he maybe later on, mention to Brienne where she's at? Like if he comes across Brienne later on, could he say, hey, I actually met someone like that. Or in talking to Littlefinger, I found her, but I'm paid to keep quiet on it. But here's where she's at. You know what I mean? Like he could be, not that he would double cross Littlefinger. I don't know. He's sort of a wild card. Like the Mad Mouse is just kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's one of those characters where I was so worried for years. And again, we're so many years later after the last book that I'm sitting here going like, it is no wonder. It's a freaking rat. One time I saw Matt turn around and get into all those cords he has behind his desk, like the rat's nest of cords. And I thought, this is what George is looking at when he looks at his series, going, I put the Mad Mouse in here. Like all these characters he adds in, all these different layers, it is just absolutely wild to think about. So yeah, he could be interesting. What is he going to do? What type of knight is the Mad Mouse? Is he lying about some of his accomplishments and things like that? That's the other piece that Brienne is always she's going through. She comes across different knights and she realizes they're not as honorable. Some are. Some hold true to their vows. Some don't. Does she challenge him? And it's all in relationship to Sansa. So now Littlefinger himself too is vying for power. He's got this year with the Lord's Declarant and he is up to something. I think the poisoning, Sweet Robin is interesting. He's been known to have other people poisoned and work in poisonings and things like that. So that way his hand is clean of all these things. So I don't know how that would be discovered or what the deal would be there. Because if he does accomplish that, then he's actually getting ready to marry possibly his daughter or Sansa, right? Will be then given over to Harry the heir, right? That's the next they're all looking at him as a possibility for Sansa. So I don't know.
Right here too. In George's original outline, which we can go look at and stuff like that, right? It was supposed to be a perhaps John Arya Tyrion love triangle. But remember, he had initially planned for sort of like an aging up 5-year gap. And so Arya would have been a little bit older. And so some people have theorized going back to the Sansa arc is that John and Sansa could get together because John would be a Targaryen, right? And then Sansa would be a Stark, which would then also fit the idea of a Song of Ice and Fire.
It's not crazy.
Which we mostly think is all John and Dany, because we still think of John as a Stark more than we think of him as a Targaryen, because technically he grew up in the North and all this stuff.
Right.
But then it would actually be John as Fire, if you want to view it that way, and Sansa Stark as ice.
Which is so crazy because Sansa is more like her mother, who's from the Riverlands, right? And then Jon is more like his mother, who's from the North, you know? Right. But also he's got the fire blood in him, and he would represent it's so bonkers to kind of think about how that would be flipped. And to think about the female line, George does that a lot, which is like, people talk about the Blackfyre line and it was carried on through the female line, or how the prince is really the princess and so on. He's master of these sorts of manipulations, and we've all kind of lined up in our mind, like when we think of Targaryens, we often just think of the platinum hair and the eyes and so on, but some of them were Dornish, some of them did not look Targaryen at all. So they still represent, do they still represent fire or not? Do you have to? That's a pretty cool one. Sansa is a total wild card, and I've never really known where to go with her, because maybe Littlefinger
George doesn't either, and that's why he's
Stuck. That's why he's stuck, because and Littlefinger's demise as well. I feel like that's going to happen, but I just don't know.
I think it's going to be totally different than the shows.
Yeah, and it needs.
I would not be. I think Littlefinger. We did a big thing about don't count out Littlefinger a while ago, and we basically said everyone just counts him. Even Jamie, everyone, and he's going to be his ending in the show is easily one of the worst, if not the worst, to be entirely honest.
Well,
it just feels like we need to kill him off.
Right. And he's one of those characters who's been around since the beginning, you know? So I always go back to these were characters who were early on in George's mind, and he's using other characters. Like we talk about Val, we brought up the Mad Mouse. We talk about these other wildling characters who show up or whatever, other lords that appear later in the series. They don't matter as much. They are that second wave, and I know the 5-year gap was the thing, but like these are characters who've been around since the beginning. He had a plan, he had an outline with them, and they will have their moment because they've just been near and dear to him, and in whatever way they can be to the author. But Littlefinger is it's hard to tell. I always thought him and Varys were going to have some showdown, and I was waiting for that in the show, and it just never happened. I mean, Arya, why in the heck is Arya involved in any of that? I just, Sansa, I get like she's had a history with him, and that's got to be her big takedown, but I don't know. So yeah, we'll see. We can kind of
dive all into it. Okay. Let's move on to the Riverlands. This is Brianne and Jamie. They're both in Penny Tree. At least that's their last known location. And Brianne is looking for Sansa, and she's telling Jamie to follow her, essentially. So last known plot points were, having recently concluded the siege of Riverlands and Ravenhall Tree, Jamie encountered Brienne, who is likely leading Jamie into a trap. The Brotherhood Without Banners, led by Lady Stoneheart, has been hanging the frays. Brendan Tully escaped Riverrun, and as of the end of A Dance of Dragons, has not been captured yet. Davin Lannister plans to marry a Frey girl. Jane Westerling heads to Casterly Rock under an escort by Sir Forley Prester and a few hundred guards. And at Comic-Con 2014, George did say that the prologue would have Jane Westerling in it. But that was also 2014.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, we think it's been changed. We think some of those things have been changed for sure.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. The Riverlands, Lady Stoneheart has always been a wild card too. Like, just something the show never touched, and where will her arc go? Feel like her, you know, this is where I think if you take out Arya, you could have something with Brienne, Littlefinger, Stoneheart, and Sansa, and all of that kind of work itself out there, not work itself out, but like come to some sort of conclusion. Brendan Tully is always interesting. The fact that he did escape and is on the run, the Blackfish, and not knowing really where that's gonna go. His brother is dead, and and then what's his name? Catelyn's brother. He was captured, and then he's made sort of an alliance with Jamie, but now Jamie's
off, Brandon,
you know, yeah, headed into this trap. I mean, I think Lady Stoneheart is the key here in that she is going to lose some of her support. I think that Thoros is going to turn on her and say, this is just, we've gone too far. This is not right. Beric Dondarrion makes a sacrifice to bring her back because I think there's some sort of like appreciation for Eddard Stark, and this is his wife. And so he does this, but he didn't really have Thoros's blessing to give her that kiss. And she's just full of vengeance, hanging Freys. So she'll be a part of the Frey demise. But I think somehow Jaime and Brienne get out of this, and Thoros could be a part of that, right? I feel like Thoros could help them. He's more honorable, and I think he's going to see that it was like Brienne's going to have to deal with the fact that she made these oaths and these vows, and she may have to kind of, does she keep her oath, or is she going to have to, is it fulfilled? I mean, has she done everything that she can do, and is Lady Stoneheart just out of line? I don't know. It's kind of how I feel about that.
Okay.
Section.
Okay. Let's move on to next one here, which is the Iron Islands, right?
Yeah.
So POV characters include Aaron Dampier Greyjoy, who's hiding / rallying the Ironborn against Euron and godlessness in general. Dampier is reportedly in Great Wick rallying the Ironborn against Euron. So that's at least the last known plot points from him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. we think actually quite differently what's going to happen with him, because it seems like Euron's already got him.
Yeah. And this is where we get into, like, you know, when you consider the Winds of Winter release chapters, they could be changed. There could be a lot of things that are happening. But at that one, I mean, that idea is pretty well accepted, that he, because Euron is a destroyer of gods, and he wants to be a god, right? All these references and the symbolism around him suggest that he believes himself to be one, that he has powers that other people don't have, that he's the crow's eye, that he has his banner is interesting. He's amassing this force. He's trying to get Danny, send his brother down with Dragonbinder to try and get Danny and secure like a marriage. So he's power hungry. He doesn't just want to raid. He wants to go and conquer. He's this conqueror, right? So I think he's got damp air, and he's a done man, or he'll be turned into a thrall of some kind, right? Yeah. And Euron himself is a whole thing that you could get into. What this Reddit post doesn't mention is really just him and the fact that he is someone we're looking at, just point of view characters right now. But I think in time we'll we'll get that, or we're going to get Sam looking out at Euron and his force or something, right? You know? So,
yeah. Okay. King's Landing. So we can spend a lot of time here. So you have big POV characters, right? That's ultimately who these are focused on. It's just is the POV characters. Cersei, she's in the Red Keep, recovering her from her walk of shame, playing at patience. Cersei has opted for trial by battle, choosing Robert Strong, aka the Mountain, as her champion. The Faith sits supreme inside the city. The High Sparrow holds political and military power inside the city. Kevin Lannister has been killed by Varys's little birds. A Tyrell host sits outside of King's Landing to ensure a fair trial for Margaery. Formerly, it was invested in the Siege of Storm's End. The crown is heavily in debt, and the Iron Bank of Braavos is backing Stannis now.
Yeah.
So this is one that, you know, the show it goes in a direction where, man, Cersei gets all the Tyrells and everyone there. She blows up the Sept of Baelor. Tommen decides to kill himself. And that's really kind of the end of the Faith. We're done with them. You and I have talked about a lot of different possibilities. I'm big onto this sort of the Hound. I think we're getting Clegane Bowl early, far earlier than the show. In that, the Hound is the, you know, he seems like he's the gravedigger, right? Mm-hmm. At that monastery. And I think he could hear about or find out about or something, be chosen by the Faith as their champion. And then we could get Clegane Bowl, which would be super cool to have it earlier. And then it'd be not just sort of meaningless when that fight takes place. It's essentially kind of meaningless, to be entirely honest.
Yeah.
And the show. So I think that's a scenario. The Faith itself, I mean, they're going to have to be dealt with. I do not think they are going to be sticking around for very much longer. I don't think they're like the show got it 100% wrong, and the Faith are going to be around for a lot longer, whether it is a Sept of Baelor blowing them up or something, or they lose their trial by combat or whatever. I do think the Faith are not long in Winds of Winter. But yeah. I just don't know that we're going to blow the Sept of Baelor up and have Tommen kill himself in the same way. I think Marcella is actually a much more important piece. She's still alive, unlike the show. And I think you and I have talked before about the idea that their roles might be a little flipped, in fact. Right. But right. I don't think Cersei's going to die due to the dealing with the Faith. But I do not know that Cersei's making it all the way to the end and being a figure in the end like she is in the books.
In the show.
She could, you know, she could be married to young Griff. Don't think so, but she could be. And then that would give her power, and there's a lot of stuff. Or Dany could just come over and kill her. But
right. So yeah, a couple things. I mean, like I agree with you totally that that Marcella be the one to maybe kill her own self because of things that happened to her. Her Dornish prince, or things that happened with Sand Snakes coming up into
Darkstar. Kings.
Yeah, all those different things. And then Tommen could be poisoned. We know that someone is poisoning a member of the Kingsguard who is kind of like his food taster, right? It feels like he is getting sick. So that's been interesting. I feel like even if Cersei loses, even if Clegane Bowl does happen and Robert Strong loses, I feel like she's going to say, I'm going to take things into my own hands. She could at that point say, okay, yeah, I lost and the Hound won on behalf of the Faith. He the Hound rides out of town. They come to take her in to punish her or like execute her. And she just blows them all up and says, I don't think so. That still could kind of happen if you wanted to. Now, the other thing is the Winds of Winter chapters. It's interesting because Arianne Martell, when you look at those, and we haven't really considered those in a lot of this because they're shifting and they're changing. And one of the reasons why we don't is right here, because the Tyrell host is sitting outside waiting and making sure that the Margaery Tyrell trial goes well. But in like one of the Winds of Winter release chapters, we hear that young Griff is meeting Mace Tyrell on the field. So we don't know when, even those ones that are released, we don't know in which order they've been released or what events, how far into Winds of Winter, when they've been kind of, I guess the sequence of events, you know what I mean? Because he can tell you something that happens through a Cersei point of view chapter, and then you can go to another point of view chapter and then pick up the story has moved on or whatever. So I think that one's a little bit, definitely, it's like the trickiest one. King's Landing is so tricky. It can go in so many different ways, and Cersei for sure, I think, sticks around for a while. I'm just not so sure if she'll stay in King's Landing or be betrothed. She doesn't want to get married anymore. So maybe she, I don't know. I don't know what young Griff is going to do. That's the real tricky. I think he beats Mace Tyrell, and I think he is going to march right into King's Landing. It's just that, can she defeat him too?
And another big huge difference. Kevin Lannister has been killed,
right?
And that is a bit, because Kevin Lannister is killed in the Sept of Baelor in the show, but Kevin Lannister in the books is a way bigger player, a way more valuable thing. The paranoia is going to be a much bigger factor for Cersei this. And Marcella's been attacked. Kevin Lannister has been killed. And right. I mean, Cersei's downfall, I think, will come at her own hands.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. She's going to do something that I love. We were in the Bannerman hangout and we had people talking about does she have such a change where in which it's like the flaws of her early younger queen self.
Right. I was saying,
is that like, you? Okay,
What if Cersei herself in theory is the Valonqar, and that it was the younger, more beautiful,
queen,
because you look at all the decisions she made once she became queen. Yeah. She, you know, is cheating on Robert with Jaime, aborting kid. I mean, there's.
Yeah, so she's her own undoing. Yeah.
She could be her own undoing.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that.
And the decision to go have her life prophesied.
Yeah.
You know, like, was that that from that moment? It's like has such a controlling.
Yeah. Right.
Factor to her life.
Yeah. The other one more quick, just mention, people mentioned Marcella, and like, if that's the final loss is her daughter, maybe Tommen is poisoned first and she's leaning on Marcella and she then kills herself and she's, you know, not really another queen, but she is sort of next in line. If she doesn't like her mother for whatever reason, again, it still could be a combination of Cersei's actions and her offing, you know, Marcella's love interest. And then who knows, but just more things to kind of consider. Matt and I are throwing out all the different, a lot of just like tinfoil-y crazy ideas that we've read and things that have kind of come across our plate in terms of these different regions, for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, let's continue on here. So the Stormlands, right? So the Stormlands POV chapters include John Connington and Arion Martell. So in Griffin's Roost, preparing to move on Storm's End with Aegon, you know, the young Griff, at the lead, and Arya Martell's and Sunspear, which I guess is technically Dorne, but they're just lumping them in here, setting out to meet John Connington and Aegon, young Griff. So having taken Griffin's Roost in several castles in the Stormlands, Lord John Connington and Aegon Targaryen march on Storm's End. Two of these castles, Rainwood and Tarth, are held by a family of POV characters, Brienne and Davos. Per the Winds of Winter, Arion II, Storm's End was taken in a bloody siege by Aegon. Arion Martell rides for Aegon, holding the power of war and peace and whatever message she sends back to Sunspear.
Right. So this is one I was mentioning too. As you consider the Winds of Winter chapter, it's like, how much stuff has happened in King's Landing? Have they heard rumor of this? Has Mace Tyrell, do we get a chapter where he talks with Cersei or whoever, and they move their forces out to face down John Connington and Aegon, right? I mean, that could be happening. But this is interesting because Arion does allude to the fact that she has this power where she can either back young Griff or she could go destroy. She almost, I think it's in the bone way, right? She has an army or an access that she could send word, and that force could either come in and do one of two things, either back young Griff or take him out. She wanted to meet him first, right? She was trying to get there to meet young Griff and to assess him, to see what type of person or what type of dragon or character he is going to be, or what type of leader he would be. But she doesn't make it there in time. So she's got an interesting decision to make in Winds of Winter for sure.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I also think, you know, I've talked about the idea that John Connington is interesting because he has grayscale, unlike Jor Mormont in the show.
Right.
And perhaps that John Connington could be sent to the Citadel to be healed, like we saw with Jorah in the show. And that John Connington could then potentially reveal information. Or what if, I mean, it'd be interesting if he goes to the Citadel and has a conversation with Sam and Sam's healing him from grayscale. And John Connington has this revelation that, wow, he might not actually be the son. It might be Jon Snow, because Sam is going to be there trying to learn about the Sphinx and the riddle and could learn that information there. So that could be interesting. That's just a theory I've always talked about. And I've thought about, because it's like, why does Jorah get sent to the Citadel to deal with this grayscale when it's the other way around? So does that mean it's going to be John Con instead?
When at some point George has to explain, you know, who did tell, who knows the information that sent Eddard Stark to the Tower of Joy? Who are the people that were around that understand how Robert's Rebellion began, and or who, as you said, who Jon Snow really is? Like, those things have to trickle out in some way. And John Connington's a really interesting character. And at what point would he go to the Citadel for this healing? You feel like it would be after a time of peace. So as this Redditor kind of alluded to, Arianne has that ability to kind of say, let's send overwhelming force in and siege King's Landing and just take over. And now Dorne is in power and you've got this stuff. There's a time and a period where you can settle in, and then John Connington can go get healed up from his grayscale. Like, at that point, they've accomplished something. He can then go over there. So I feel like, he lives. I feel that that's one of the reasons why, ever since you brought this up, Sir Matt, I've been thinking he can't do that right now, or he's not going to do that right now. He wants to make sure he sticks around for young Griff, I think, as long as he can. But he'll quickly have to go over and get healed of this, because it's concerning him. He keeps kind of pulling up his sleeve and looking at it and realizing it's spreading. So that has always made me think that young Griff will prevail, and that Varys and Illyrio have been masterminding this for a long time. And Cersei has not been making great political maneuvers, and she's well occupied with the faith and distracted by all of this, and is probably tearing herself apart. And you got to consider, like, the Sand Snakes and Oberyn Martell moving all his pieces around. Well, actually, even Oberyn versus the Sand Snakes. We were talking about Darkstar. We just did a great little breakdown on who told on Arianne Martell, you know, which of those individuals was talking to Doran. And then, why did Darkstar strike Myrcella? Was he trying to start a war? Was that, you know, whatever? So there's a whole other sub kind of plot going on between King's Landing and Dorne. And then you just rolled young Griff right in the middle of all of it too. Like, that is just straight chaos. So again, another rat's nest, right? It's that George just puts together, and it's so complex that it's really hard to untangle. So,
right. Yeah, we'll see. This kind of ties me right here into the next one, which is the Reach, which is Sam, right, who's at the Citadel. So the Ironborn under Euron Greyjoy have successfully seized the Shield Islands and the Arbor and are conquering more and more territory. By Samwell's last chapter, the Ironborn have pushed the Reacher Lords back to Old Town and are launching raids against the city. Paxter Redwine's fleet has crossed the Stepstones as of the Winds of Winter, Arianne 1, and is on their way to fight the Ironborn. The glass candles are burning. Marwyn the Mage has departed Old Town for Daenerys Targaryen and Slaver's Bay. Samwell Tarly is starting Maester training and encounters Pate, who could be Jaqen H'ghar, wearing the face of Pate at the Citadel. Brightwater Keep, home of the Florence, is likely still held by the Florence Stannis Baratheon loyalists. So there's a lot going on in Old Town and in the Citadel, and I think it is going to be a big focus of the Winds of Winter.
Right, and one prediction I'd like to make is that Marwyn the Mage will probably, you know how we see Varys stay with Dany, and he becomes like an advisor, and he's there with Tyrion. I really think that will be Marwyn the Mage, who has departed Old Town and is headed straight for Dany, and there'll be time for her to get back from her adventures with the Dothraki. So he's interesting. The fact that Euron is moving in here, our good friend Sir Jimmy was talking us through, and we'll bring him on at some point, maybe just to kind of talk about this whole idea that Sam the Slayer will be the one sort of defending your realm of knowledge, or your city of knowledge, Old Town, the Citadel, and all these different things, the High Towers, and that he may have to defend them against the great Euron Greyjoy, and that he might even slay him. And It's so crazy. And actually, stick around for our extended edition later on, where I'm going to talk more about some things that our Bannerman revealed to me about the Sphinx and a special bow and the connection to Sam and his archery skills, and then connections to like my own theory with Rhaenys Targaryen. I just think there's so much surrounding riddles and the Sphinx and Aemon Targaryen that I want to talk to you guys about, because that's all going on here at the Reach. It's another one of those points, Matt, where like we talked in the far north, there's a lot of power, there's a lot of magic happening deeper. There's a deeper magical element there. And in the Reach, it's not maybe as obvious, but like Lord Hightower is doing something up in his high tower. Euron Greyjoy has magical artifacts. Sam is getting in here working with Marwyn the Mage, who's super into the higher mysteries. And they have glass candles, and you've got the freaking Sphinx. And you've got Jack right. and Hagar sneaking around. Like, it is another right. just chaos-filled kind of region where so much is happening. And Sam has the horn. I mean,
I know it's going to be super, super important. Sam's role is,
yeah.
Ooh, he could be the revealer of everything, to be entirely honest. So let's shift gears here. Talk about Dorne, which you and I actually did a big mega Patreon episode.
Yeah.
Over like an hour long. You can go check out. So we don't necessarily have to spend too much time on Dorne in this. Go check out that. Cause it was like a mega breakdown about Darkstar and everything that's going on there. So POV characters include Arya Hotar, who's searching for Darkstar. With Aerys Okhart dead, Sir Baelon Swan rides with Arya Hotar in search for Gerald Darkstar Dane. Dorne has dispatched Lady Nymeria Sand with Marcella back to King's Landing openly. Secretly, he has also dispatched Tyene Sand as a septa in order to learn more about the High Sparrow. Dorne has also dispatched Arya Martell to investigate the claims of Young Griff, Aegon the Sixth. Two Dornish armies lie in wait within the Dornish marches, awaiting only a word from Arya/Dorne to commence war. I mean, and if there's anything the show got wrong more than is Dorne. They didn't even know what to do with Dorne. The ratings started to drop a little bit, and they're just like, scrap it now.
Right. Right. They gave up on that in entirely. So I think you're right. That Dorne is way more interesting than we think, and it is directly connected to all the stuff that is happening in King's Landing. It's also in proximity, really close to the Reach. This is great the way we've kind of worked from the far north all the way down here, because these things in proximity, they connect with one another, right? So something interesting about Sir Baelon Swan is there's a great theory out there about his sigil, it being sort of one half white, one half black, and you get into the house of black and white, you get all those different sort of connections to like Weirwood and these your dark kind of dragon glass looking color. And so he's going down. His brother Donald Swan is interesting, but yeah, there are theories about him going down to face Gerald Dane, aka Darkstar, which is fascinating. As Matt said, we covered a lot of that and what Obara Sand might be doing. The other piece that's interesting here that you mentioned is Nymeria Sand. I mean, the Sand Snakes are going out and doing their thing. They're going like Dorne is now got them moving and has them going into King's Landing. So Andy's got Arianne assessing who Young Griff is. This, to me, it seems like if you wanted revenge, back this army. If you beat the Tyrells and you can get Tyene Sand in next to the Septa, or Cersei takes care of the High Sparrow, excuse me. If you can get rid of him and take care of the Faith, by God, the Dorne's got it, right? They can just get in there, lock arms with Young Griff, and it seemingly will work out for Dorne until I think you have Dany come up, you know, show up. I feel like too many alliances will be made too quickly. I feel like he should have waited for his aunt, air quote aunt, like Young Griff should wait until she comes with her dragons, and this might offend her if he doesn't just present her the throne. You know what I mean? Like if Young Griff is sitting there, I feel like this is where Dorne is going to get themselves in a bit of trouble. They've waited so long, and when they finally do strike, things look good. They acquire King's Landing. They root Cersei out. They get their revenge on the Lannisters, only to be just wasted and destroyed because they picked the wrong dragon. Quentin's mission failed, and Arianne seems to be successful in gaining access to Aegon, but really, he's not the dragon who's going to reign. You know, I feel like that might be the way that goes. So
yeah, I agree. And again, we just did a massive Patreon episode on that. So if you guys really want to dive a lot more into Dorne, be sure to check that out. So the free cities include Arya Stark, right? She's in Mercy's bedroom in Braavos, rejoining a play after murdering Raff the Sweetling, right? Remember, she's training with the House of Black and White. So per the Mercy, the Winds of Winter sample chapter, Arya is in the midst of a mummer sub-training as part of her Faceless Man training. Sir Harris Swift, Master of Coin from the Iron Throne, is in Braavos attempting to get the Iron Bank of Braavos to negotiate its debt and get back on good graces with the Iron Bank. And then Arya murders Raff the Sweetling. I think Arya's immediate arc is going to be pretty similar. To be honest, she's going to learn just enough to whatever it is she needs to learn. She's going to end up being like, I am Arya Stark, leaving and heading back to Westeros and begin a reign of terror.
Right. Honestly, this is probably the quickest one we're going to do because I don't know that it's going to go much different. It seems to be kind of straightforward. That this might be a point where he could throw us a curveball. I don't know. I think maybe some other minor characters kind of creep in here, or we learn something else about other plot lines, like if she overhears some stuff, right? Because that's her thing, she's been sneaking around. Like maybe that's a possibility, but it seems to be the inner workings of this group, the Faceless Men, and that also might be interesting to learn about someone who's on a mission over in Old Town, right? I feel like that's the only other tricky bit that might come out of this, is she's going to learn about events around the world, but otherwise, as far as what she's going to do, it's just acquire the training and the knowledge and bounce.
Now, when Arya comes back, I think Arya, for me, like potential scenarios include, I could see Arya, I've said this before, being the reason that Lady Stoneheart dies. Like, to me, Lady Stoneheart is kind of like a ghost in that it's lingering in this world. And then if it were to see Arya, like the real Arya, alive and safe, it would kind of be like, I don't need.
Maybe she gives her mercy, you know, maybe she,
right,
gives her the gift of mercy.
Nice. Which would be interesting or cool. And other than that, I think Arya's going to come back. Arya could be the one to kill Cersei. Arya could be the one come kill the, you know, Walder Frey, like she does in the show. I mean, she's going to come back and start working on her list. I think she's likely to run into the Hound again and have a different relationship with him. I think that's pretty likely.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think she's going to be the one to kill Littlefinger like we saw on the show.
Yeah.
But to me, Arya's coming back, and probably by the end of Winter Winter, she'll be back. That might even be her final chapter, is just her stepping foot on Westeros.
Yeah.
And then her reign of terror begins in the next book. But to her, it seems real straightforward. I think it's just she's going to come back.
Yeah, this is going to sound, and I will totally admit this is just straight tinfoil. And as you sit around, you think about like crazy things that could happen. We mentioned earlier on the show that Sansa could end up marrying Jon, right? The whole fulfilling the target, her marrying a Targaryen situation. And maybe then that doesn't mean she's Queen of the North, and that who would be the Queen of the North? The only other queen that you could have from the Stark family would be Arya, which would be highly unlikely, right? The idea that she totally doesn't want this whole life of being like a lady or like a princess or even a queen. And that we all kind of were, I was thinking when the show was going on, I'm like, oh my God, she's going to marry Gendry. The whole thing's going to go down. It's going to be such a twist or whatever. They did not do that, but she does reclaim her name. I think she is going to reclaim. She's not no one. She is Arya Stark. And what does that mean? Does that mean she's going to do something more for her family and go back to family loyalties and what matters for this story? And then at the end, she bounces to Ashai or whatever, or west of Westeros. I don't know, but it would be interesting to see her go on her reign of terror and then settle down somewhat, because her list is the people that she keeps mentioning on her list. They're getting killed. She kills a few of them, but most of them are getting killed. So she runs out of people to kill. And then what does she do? I don't know. Right. I mean, that's right. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. I've often thought that could be interesting as well. Like the idea that, like the idea that Arya ends up sort of becoming a lady, and that Sansa, who wanted that life, ends up being like, I'm done. Like, I've had enough of this.
Right.
Right. So yeah, that would be crazy, that would be interesting as well. Okay. I think just a few more here. Yeah. So we did the free cities. So only have two left. So the Dothraki Sea. Okay. So this is a big one, obviously. Mm-hmm. This is really, we could really start to just kind of view these last two in all honesty together. Yeah. Because
no. Let's read them together. Yeah.
So first of all, it's just going to be Daenerys. Daenerys and the Dothraki Sea, right? The last thing we see with Daenerys is Daenerys and Drogon are in a place that Dany calls Dragonstone. Khal Joko and his Khalasar are nearby and eventually confront Dany. George said that Mago, one of Khal Joko's blood riders, will be a reoccurring character in the Winds of Winter, right? Remember Dany's. So again, some of that's Winds of Winter, but if you pull back, the last thing we see is Dany is taken off by Drogon, and then we're going to go into the sort of, what is it? Dosh Kaleen, where she's picked up by the wives. I think immediately her arc is going to be kind of the same as the show. She's going to have to kill all those women and make them realize that she's the real deal.
Yeah.
She's going to come forth with a Dothraki army back to Slaver's Bay and take over. And then I think she's going to be in Westeros by the end of the book.
Yeah.
The big question, though, is Euron, does she meet up with him? Does she interact with him? Mm-hmm. In the show, we see her when she ends up coming over, she goes and meets with the Tyrells and Dorne and Yara in the show, which is Asha in the books, and beginning to form an alliance. And then we go from there.
Right.
So to me, her arc is pretty similar the way it goes down in the show initially. And then it's going to be a big peace mover as to what's going on with young Griff, because young Griff is such a game changer for her. She could end up marrying young Griff. She could view him as the Mummer's dragon. There's a lot.
Yeah. I feel like with a dragon and with Dany and this whole idea that Quaithe has been reminding her to remember who she is and all these prophecies she's seen, she's just more and more going to become the dragon. And she's going to really embrace this. She's the princess that's promised all these different things. She is going to fly out of there. I think at this point, it's like enough is enough. You've done everything you can up until she is this whole bit, the assassination attempt, and then she's flying out on Drogon, and she has like dysentery at the end of that chapter, and she's like really losing it. And that's why I think Mago will have the point of view chapter. I think she's going to be sick, and they're going to help her, offer help, but like return her, as you said, to the wives. And yeah, she's going to burn that down once she gets like her power back, if you will. Gets Drogon, leads them back, and as you said, marches right on to Westeros. The interesting part is just when she gets to Westeros, what happens? Who is sitting on the Iron Throne? Is it young Griff? Is it Cersei? Is it someone else? Who's married to young Griff? What type of alliance has Dorne made there? And what has Euron done with Old Town? Has Sam been able to keep him at bay? And is he going to swing on around and try to, you know, court Dany himself? Because his brother, it seems like he's going to fail. He's trying to actually present himself as an option for marriage, right? So the whole Hisdar thing too, all that stuff's going to get shut down. It's all just going to be, she's done with it. If you want to come with me, we're moving on. We're out of here. I know it's the Green Grace, and there's some really complicated politics, the Sons of the Harpy going on in there that Barristan Selmy has to deal with. And while Dany is doing her thing, Matt, right, as she's dealing with the wives and all of that, we will see Tyrion in his arc with Barristan Selmy continue. They'll finish up all of that scheming and political backstabbing and stuff, and that will have proven that'll be Tyrion's way to make some points. Maybe Marwyn the Mage shows up there as well, works with Tyrion, and they prepare a way for Dany to exit, and that I think will do wonders for them and as far as getting into her good graces. You know, those are people working on her behalf, and that'll be good. So
yeah, agreed. Okay, let's finish here with Slaver's Bay. So we have Barristan Selmy, Tyrion, and Victorian Greyjoy, who are our point of view characters. So Barristan Selmy was last seen south of Meereen attacking the south camp of the young Kaiash army. Tyrion was seen outside of Meereen in the Second Son's camp, mocking fools, successfully convincing Brown Ben Plum to turn. and Victorian Greyjoy was in Slaver's Bay, waiting aboard his flagship with Morico, preparing to have his three thralls below the Dragon Horn. So per the Winds of Winter sample chapters by Barristan, Victorian, and Greyjoy, the Battle of Fire is in full swing. Barristan and his mixed army of Unsullied, Sellswords, Pit Fighters, and Free Companies is successfully defeating the Slavers as he encounters them. The Windblown have turned on Yunkai and are attacking the Slavers in this camp. Tyrion is successfully convincing the Second Sons to turn on the Yunkai-ish. Rhaegal is flying over Slaver's Bay while Viserion has returned to the Ysarin Pyramid. And the Ironborn have broken through the Slaver's feet and are landing soldiers on the beaches. So yeah, we're definitely going to be seeing a big battle from the get-go. Euron's going to be involved. And this one is like, is going to be so massively different than the show, because Euron, I think, is endgame, if I have to really sort of pick somebody. And we're going to be blowing Dragonbinder, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a big game changer.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's got his brother there, Victarion, using three people to blow it. It's going to consume them. I mean, Makoro is there talking, and you know, he's definitely a red magical individual who I think will see some things in the flames. The fact that they're landing, the fact that the Ironborn are landing there and going into this battle is crazy. Ships from Karth have shown up. There's a lot going on. Barristan Selmy is headed into war, and it's people are guessing that maybe he won't make it. I kind of think he does, and that he will come back.
I think Barristan is going to end up making it. Again, some of this just goes into the idea that just because those sample chapters are subject to change.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure they are. And here's the thing too. I feel like who is left there then in charge for, you know, to represent Dany. Dany's not there. She's not going to be there. She's going to go back, I believe, to the Dothraki Sea. And so, that's where she's at. It's going to take a while for her to get back to the city. So they've got to handle things. And for anyone to get in power or to secure the city for Dany on her behalf, like, Barristan still needs to be at the head of that to sanction, like, yes, Tyrion's okay. And to allow him to be an advisor. Hopefully Marwyn makes it. Maybe Victarion does get in there and he does something. Maybe he does help in some way. But when Dany shows up, maybe there is a tentative alliance between her and the Greyjoys, perhaps, because they are landing troops and they're coming in to do their own thing. Although they're pretty aggressive and saying that they want her to kind of not bend the knee, but, like, you know, make this alliance. I don't think she's gonna like that too much. But again, she's not there, so you have to have Barristan still there to, I think, okay a lot of this stuff. So. His star is no one. There's so much going on with the Sons of the Harpy that no one could trust anyone right now. And so he's one of her loyal, you know, subjects. So he's got
Tyrion, I think, might find where whores go. We could run into Tysha, which is one that people have definitely talked about. But yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I mean, so much of this is to me, I just view it as Euron, Victorion, dependent of what's going to ultimately happen over there. And that's going to influence Dany big time.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends. For starters, I think there's 0% chance that even if young Griff, like, marries Cersei or even Sansa, that Euron marries Daenerys. Like, 0% chance, which is, like, his idea, right? I'll go over there and I'll marry her, and we'll go. From there. I think Euron might actually win and take over a lot of Dany's territory because she's gone, and so then that's going to give her even more reason to just be like, all right, I'm done with this, and I have a Dothraki army now, and I'm just going to go take over Westeros. But I don't think Euron then goes and teams up with Cersei like he does in the show.
Yeah, the only reason he would is so, you know, with Old Town being just south of Casterly Rock, right? So, like, when Euron is like laying siege kind of to everything that's happening, and Sam is doing his thing at Old Town, if young Griff does kick Cersei out and the Dorne and Martell and like Arianne, all of them make their way, they beat the Tyrells, the faith is gone or whatever, decimated, and Cersei has to retreat to the Rock, it does put her closer to the Iron Islands, and it does put her closer to Euron and some wealth and some, you know, I don't know, like that. Like, if it doesn't work out, if his brother can't secure a marriage alliance with Dany, then maybe he does go ahead and say, all right, I'm going to go ahead and marry Cersei. I don't know. That is the really tricky part, is to figure out how she gets maneuvered around and where she goes. Cause Jaime's out in the Riverlands doing his thing. So, your Lannisters in power are, it's just Cersei. Kevin's been killed. So I feel like, what do you do when you can't win this battle against Young Griff and the Golden Company, and the Tyrells are defeated out on the field, and Dorne sends its army, you know, like when Dorne steps in and says, we have these forces in the Bone Way, and they take over King's Landing. Boom. I think she's got to hightail it out of there. And I think she'll go back to Casterly Rock, where she is, can be safe. That's the only way I think that she, if you said, oh, they have to be together, Euron and Cersei, right, which that's just what the show does. But let's say that's an option. I feel like the best way to get those two together is to have her out of King's Landing. So
I agree.
I don't know.
I agree. Yeah.
But
okay. Well, that is a breakdown of most of, I think, just about every region, like all the POV characters that we know about heading into Winds of Winter. So we can definitely come back and talk about more people specifically.
Right. Because there's a bunch of underlying.
Right, there's a bunch of underlying theories and stuff like that. I definitely want to do one about Rickon soon. That's like just a very we already did one, but what we asked you guys in a community poll on our YouTube page, who did you guys want specific big breakdowns on? And it was overwhelmingly Val, who we did, and then also Rickon. So we want to come back and do a Rickon Stark video. So with that, guys, again, we did a big Dorne breakdown as well on our Patreon, so you can check that out. That was about an hour long episode just about what's going on with Dorne and Winds of Winter, Darkstar focused, Arya Hota, Arya and Martell. So you can check that out as well. Go ahead, Ez.
And Matt, I one last pitch here. Friends, I have figured it out, and Matt will back me up on this. Sir Ryan, Sir Jimmy, we're watching some NFL last night, and guys, I went through and I feel like I'm gonna do a well polished kind of theory on some stuff I've done before regarding Sir Elisand, the Sphinx, and Rhaenys Targaryen. And I want to come listen to that in extended edition. If you can find holes in it, I want you to poke holes in it. All right. If you can find evidence that helps add to it, let me know and send that to me ASAP, so that way I can better refine the theory and make it something that's kind of cool. I feel like it's unique, and it still has some, I don't know, I feel like it still has got some credit. There's still a possibility here for it. So
absolutely awesome. All right, guys. So with that, as always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.